Good morning, everyone. It's so good to see you all. If you don't know who I am, I'm the youth pastor here at All Saints, and my name is Jake. And today I'm going to be talking to us about everyday discipleship for everyday people, apprenticing spiritual teenagers. This little story from the Gospel of Luke we just read is an absolute classic. You can probably relate to a time when you yourself, maybe as a child, were left behind by a parent. And so if you have a story like that in your life, you can relate to this passage. And if you've ever been on the opposite end and you've lost someone that you're responsible for, then this passage is for you too. I do feel that it is rather unfortunate for Mary and Joseph that the one story we have in the Bible, like really the only story we have from Jesus' childhood, is that one time Mary and Joseph lost him in Jerusalem. Any parents or grandparents or carers in the room, you don't have to be so hard on yourself, because even Mary and Joseph had some sketchy parenting moments. And they were responsible for the Messiah and the Son of God. But it is really quite wonderful that we do have this story in the Bible, because we get this unique glimpse into who Jesus was as a 12-year-old boy. And I think that this story really does go some way to deal with the tension that naturally happens in life. When there's a family relationship and a young person is starting to grow up and show some independence, and that tension in the family of how do we parent well and release them to grow up to become an adult. So today I'm going to reflect on this story with you, and I'm looking at the topic of apprenticing spiritual teenagers. And just to get us thinking about how I'm going to tackle this sermon, I'm going to be looking at this story from two angles. The first angle is looking at actual teenagers, so those in the room who are actual teenagers and their parents, and maybe on top of parents, those who support the parents, the village around that family. And the second angle is what I'm going to call spiritual teenagers and their spiritual parents. And what I mean by that is people who are Christians, but they've been Christians for some time. They're not, I guess, infants in the faith anymore. They're at that stage in their faith where they're starting to ask questions about, what does God want me to do with my life? And they're starting to test out their gifts and their skills and their passions. They're on that journey of self-discovery with God. And so the spiritual parents are the people in the church who are mentoring, role modeling, and discipling those spiritual teenagers. So there's something in this sermon for every one of us. You don't just have to be an actual teenager or an actual parent. So the story starts, every year Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the Passover. When Jesus was 12 years old, they attended the festival as usual. Luke uses a Greek word where it says the parents went to Jerusalem. It's the word go up. They went up to Jerusalem, and this word gets used in the Bible to describe going up a mountain or going up to a high place to worship God. It's like the image of a pilgrimage. So young Jesus, every year of his childhood and adolescence, he participated in his family's worship of God through the Passover. Every year he heard the story of the Exodus and of God's rescue of his people. Every year he tasted the Passover meal and reflected on God's big story and his own place within it. And every year he reenacted the history of his people, Israel. No doubt this had a really formative impact on young Jesus as he came to understand his own identity and his own mission within this grand story. That one day in his future, he would sit down and have the Passover with his disciples. And he would say, "This bread is my body broken for you. This cup is my blood poured out for the forgiveness of your sins." For Jesus to have grown up into the Messiah, he needed to identify with his people. He needed to hear the stories. He needed to worship God with his family. And for our teenagers and spiritual teenagers in this church, they need this too, to experience the stories of God and to participate in the church's worship year by year by year. Because hearing the big story and placing yourself within that big story, knowing what God has done for you, for the world, in the past, what he is doing and what he will do, this is the first step to understanding who you are and where you uniquely fit in with God's story. In a world that's increasingly telling us that to find our true identity, we need to look within ourselves, actually, as we see with young Jesus, the best thing we can pass on to our young people is the story of God and the wondrous things God has to say about them. So for our teenagers and spiritual teenagers in the room, are you participating and immersing yourself in the stories of God? Are you getting involved in the worship of the church? And for our parents and disciples in the room, are you passing on the gospel story? Are you removing barriers so that young people can come and worship and hear the story of God? The next thing that happens in the story, after the celebration was over, Jesus' parents started home to Nazareth, but Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents didn't miss him at first because they assumed he was among the other travelers. But when he didn't show up that evening, they started looking for him among their relatives and family and friends. I think the little kernel of wisdom in this part of the story is that Mary and Joseph clearly weren't the only ones who were responsible for young Jesus. But in fact, their relatives and friends, actually the whole town of Nazareth, because the whole town would have just all walked together to Jerusalem for the Passover festival, they were also responsible for Jesus. Mary and Joseph assumed Jesus was traveling with them, probably because of the close bond of relationships they had in their network of relatives and friends, and because of the trust that they had. In this whole story, it's important to notice that the text doesn't lay any blame on the parents for what happened. We're not really told whose fault it is behind what happened, though the story does seem to suggest that Jesus chose to stay back in Jerusalem. But I think that what the text does reveal is that Jesus's parents certainly gave him a lot of space and a lot of independence within the village community, and that the whole village did play a role in Jesus's growing up. And I wonder if perhaps this might be one of our blind spots today in modern Australia. Maybe we've made so much of the nucleus family that we've put all the responsibility on mum and dad's shoulders. And as a community and a society, we've kind of taken a bit less responsibility in our communal role for raising the next generation. And this might be true of actual teenagers and spiritual teenagers. We all have some role to play as disciples. And in fact, Jesus needed a wide berth and a diversity of elders and leaders to raise him into the man he became, not just Mary and Joseph. And so all of us should also take responsibility for raising and discipling the next generation of Christians. Later in the passage, after misplacing Jesus, it says that his parents, 3 days later, finally discovered him in the temple, sitting among the religious leaders, listening to them and asking questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. We can only wonder what Jesus was discussing with the religious leaders, but I think we can all relate to the experience of talking to someone younger than you and being really wowed by what they come out with. What I think this moment in young Jesus' life shows us is that our young people need safe spaces and free spaces where they can listen to the wisdom of elders, where they can ask their burning questions, and where they can really open up and say what they really think about the important things. Because chances are, when you're listening to a teenager or a spiritual teenager asking their sincere questions or sharing their honest thoughts, you'll be amazed by what they have to say. Certainly as youth pastor, this is something that I get to experience a lot of the time. So later in the story, when Mary and Joseph finally find Jesus and they ask him, "Why did you do this to us?" And Jesus responds with, "Why did you need to search? Didn't you know that I must be in my Father's house?" As if Jesus thought that this should be clear as day and apparently really obvious to his parents. Perhaps as parents or disciples, we shouldn't be all too surprised when the young people in our lives do demonstrate a remarkable wisdom or faith or attitude in life. We shouldn't be all too surprised by God doing miraculous things in the adolescent years of our teenagers and spiritual teenagers. So for our teenagers and spiritual teenagers in the room, do you have safe people in your life who you can ask, listen, and speak to? And for our parents and disciples, are you carving out space and opportunities for your young people to learn, to ask, to listen, to speak up? And are you expecting that God is working behind the scenes when you are not working? Are you storing up those special moments that you see, storing them up in your heart as you begin to see the identity of that person take shape before your very eyes? And so moving on, at the end of the passage, Jesus returned to Nazareth with his parents, and he was obedient to them. And his mother stored all these things in her heart. Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with all the people and with God. I think that one of the reasons that this whole story is in the Bible for us is because Mary treasured this moment. She noticed the significance of this moment and she passed it on to Luke, the gospel writer. She knew it was significant because Jesus was beginning to show the signs of his identity as the Messiah, as the Son of God. Did you notice in the story that Jesus went missing for 3 days? That it was in Jerusalem, that it was during the Passover festival, and that when he reappeared, he said he was about his Father's business, that he was in his Father's house. Even here at the age of 12, Jesus' identity and purpose is evident, because I think this story is a little nod to his future death and resurrection 3 days later during the Passover festival, when he himself would be the Passover lamb dying to take away the sins of the world. The other thing is, this little episode is a story of a young person taking a risk and exploring their gifts and passions. So young Jesus was practicing in this moment, asking brilliant questions and coming up with brilliant answers, something that would characterize his entire ministry and his entire life. So to our young people, I'd like to ask, are you working out what your gifts are, what your talents are, what your skills are, what you're passionate about, and what your loves are? Your adolescent years are the time of your life for doing this. So be brave, try new things, and find out what God has in store for you. Yet at the same time, as we heard from that other reading in Ecclesiastes, don't let the excitement of your youth cause you to forget your Creator. Honour him in your youth before you grow old and say, life is not pleasant anymore. So in all your risk-taking and in all your exploration, try not to forget God and his ways. Remember his love for you and remain in him as you discover your unfolding identity. Immerse yourself in the stories and worship of God, and ask and listen and speak up in the safe places with the elders around you. And to our parents and our disciples in the room, I'd like to offer this final encouragement. Obviously, it was really hard on Mary and Joseph when they were searching frantically for Jesus, and they were confronted with this young boy who was growing up perhaps a little faster than they might have expected or wanted. I think this passage is about that difficult balance every parent and every discipler needs to face when they realize that one day they'll need to release their young person and let them go on to become a spiritual adult, or in the case of actual teenagers, to grow up and become adults. We can't parent and disciple the same young people without realizing that if we want what is best for them, one day we will need to let them grow out of their adolescent years and their adolescent faith. The best thing that you can do for your young person is what we've already explored today: to pass on the story of God, to participate in worship with your young person, to provide spaces for asking and listening and speaking, to trust in the village around you and to lean into their support, and to trust that behind the scenes, God is always at work. If you're doing these things, then you're doing about as well as Mary and Joseph did. And if you're someone here today who has parented or discipled in the past, and you can look at this list and you can see that you've done some of these things, then remember that you did about as well as Mary and Joseph did. No parent or discipler is perfect, and this passage makes that clear for us. But God ordains us as imperfect people to raise our young people to prepare them for life in an imperfect world. Amen.